Thank you all very much for coming and participating in this festival. I'm going to explain a little bit of the historical and spiritual significance of this festival and the background. Before I do though, just to help us all get into the spiritual mood, the spiritual vibration, what I would like you all to do is, I would like us all to, just for a minute or even less, to chant the Hare Krishna mantra. So, can you please repeat after me? Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Krishna Krishna.
Krishna Krishna.
Hare Hare.
Hare Hare.
Hare Rama.
Hare Rama.
Hare Rama.
Rama Rama.
Rama Rama. Hare Hare.
Hare Hare.
Very good. Excellent. Now, you know what we're going to do? We're going to do a little spiritual exercise. We're going to chant Hare Krishna loud. This is like a little transcendental aerobics and so on, like this. So everybody, all of you, put your hands in the air, everyone, all your hands and arms, everyone, everything, and everyone take a deep breath. And everyone say after me, very loud, Hare Krishna! Louder. Hare Krishna! Not bad for a start. Okay, you can enjoy yourself. Well, this is a spiritual sound vibration. I think the majority of you are aware of that. There is material sound vibration and spiritual sound vibration. They exhibit the characteristics of spirit and matter. Spirit, the characteristics of spirit are three particularly. In Sanskrit, Sat, Chit, Ananda. Sat means eternal or eternality. Chit means full of knowledge, fully conscious. And Ananda means full of bliss. Then in this material world, matter and material experience, the matter exhibits three corresponding characteristics. Everything material is temporary, and matter, material existence, material experience is full of ignorance. And material existence and material experience involves a lot of suffering. Not entirely 100%, but a lot. And these things are all conspicuous by their absence on the spiritual level, on the spiritual platform. So the sound vibration, the Maha Mantra, the Hare Krishna Mantra is also known as Maha Mantra. Maha means great, the great mantra. And of course there are many other transcendental mantras. So, the idea is, and the fact is, that if we get into these things, then our experience will be eternal, it will awaken our consciousness, and it will be very blissful. Whereas our experience with material sound vibration will be temporary. It may be nice, some popular song, something like that. We all have had experience of these things. Some popular song, and for the time being we think, oh, very nice. But then after a while we get tired of it. So, just like I can give you a very clear example, a very interesting example actually. Well, I'll give you two. The first is the example of a person who was involved in Krishna consciousness for many years, actually 30 years or a little more, I think, than 30 years. And he was also an extremely famous and very influential person. Unfortunately, passed away. That's the late George Harrison from the Beatles, very famous musician. So, well, he was involved in Krishna consciousness for many years. Actually, I think from about 69 or something like that, until he passed away. So, I joined our movement in England, and he was already involved, and not that I really knew him very well, but he would come and visit our temples from time to time, a few times a year, and so we met him, and we would also visit him sometimes. And I remember one time visiting him in his big house in Henley-on-Thames outside London, and we were discussing many things, and one thing was how he got into Krishna consciousness or even spiritual life in general, and the chanting of mantras in particular, and the chanting of Hare Krishna, the Hare Krishna mantra in particular. So George explained what happened. He and the other Beatles had been to India in the mid-60s, 66 or thereabouts, and they went a number of times. And they got introduced to yoga and meditation and so on. And then they came back and they are continuing their work in music. So one time, he and John Lennon, they were on a boat cruise in the Mediterranean. And one morning they woke up and just somehow or other they just picked up their guitars and just started singing Hare Krishna. Not that they were already really into it, but this is just somehow or other the idea came to them that morning, so they did. So this is like 7 o'clock in the morning or so. So there they are now playing their guitars, singing Hare Krishna, and getting into it and into it. At 9 o'clock or so came, someone came along and said, it's breakfast time, you must stop and come along. But they didn't stop, they just carried on through the morning. Then lunchtime came, and they were just completely into it. Someone came and said, you must stop and have lunch, but they didn't stop. They just carried on and on into the evening. And then someone came and said, it's time for dinner. But they didn't stop. And they eventually stopped at 5 o'clock the next morning, 22 hours later. So George was explaining to myself and one of our devotees who was a very close friend of his. Now, he was explaining how all this happened and the experience which he got from it. And he said it was a very powerful experience, very deep experience of going beyond ordinary day-to-day existence and the feelings and emotions that we experience generally in day-to-day life. And it was a very wonderful experience. He felt so extremely inspired and enlivened. And he said that at the end he felt convinced that these mantras, it was like a turning point in his life, actually. He was really convinced about mantras, and particularly the Maha Mantra. So anyway, then I asked George, what would it have been like if you had sung one of your Beatles songs for 22 hours? In fact, you know, I hate to say it, but I have to admit that I'm from that generation, more or less, myself, so I'm sort of, you know, in my day I was a bit of an expert in the Beatles and the Rolling Stones and all that. So actually what I said to him was that, George, what would it have been like if you had sung for 22 hours straight, "I Want to Hold Your Hand"? Now I think some of you have heard of that song, it seems. Famous song in its day. I must say, not an extremely deep song in terms of meaning and so on, but very, very popular. I remember actually when it was top of the hit parade, and I thought it was just, I bought it. I bought the 45. So anyway, so I asked him, what would it have been like if you'd sang, "I Want to Hold Your Hand" for 22 hours straight? And George laughed, and momentarily just sort of became thoughtful for a couple of seconds, a few seconds. And then George said, "Well, I think it would have been a hard day's night." And we all laughed, because George had a real sense of humor, and a very cutting sense of humor, and a very cutting intelligence, which is true, actually. Would have been a hard day's night, working like a dog. Anyway, I won't get into the hot thing. But that's material sound vibration. And of course, he understood it extremely clearly. He really understood it very clearly. And it stayed with him for the rest of his life till the time he died, actually, when he passed away. Not right at that moment, but just a few hours before some of our devotees, who were his very close friends from the late 60s and early 70s, they were with him chanting. And even though he was sort of semi-conscious, but he was still quite tuned in. But that, those popular songs, and I don't know what the latest is these days, I'm out of touch, I'm sorry. But all your Bollywood, a lot of you are from Indian backgrounds, Kuch Kuch Hota Hai, things like that. Then you can listen to it for a while, and after a while you get tired of it, because it's material sound vibration, and the experience is temporary. It may be nice, it is nice, for a while, but then after a while it becomes less nice, and then it becomes not nice. And even, you know, if you sort of overdo it, and you kind of hear too much of it, then you eventually become sick of it. That's material sound vibration, and material experience for that matter in general. But spiritual experience is different. And I want to give a second example, which, if you don't mind, is my own, is that I have been chanting Hare Krishna and various other mantras, but particularly the Hare Krishna mantra, students, would you believe? Well, I actually took it up seriously on January the 7th, 1973. In a few days, that was not what I was looking for, but anyway. So in a few days, that'll be 34 years. I was just a young fellow, 21 at the time. And I got into it. And I've been doing it since then, till today. And actually every day, literally every day, without one exception, not one, I've chanted Hare Krishna for minimum 2 hours, usually it's more like three, sometimes more, but definitely never less than two. Every single day since January 7th, 1973. And you know, I can just tell you from my own experience that I am not bored with it. In fact, it just keeps getting better and better, really. That is definitely a fact, and I recommend it very, very strongly. So this is because it's a spiritual experience. It's not necessarily anything to do with me, but we're talking about the mantra. Because it is spiritual sound vibration. It is not just that we like it, therefore we're promoting it, something like that. But it is actually spiritual sound vibration. And if one applies oneself, of course one has to apply oneself, as with anything. But if one applies oneself to it, then definitely one will get a spiritual experience from it, which transcends things like the temporary nature of this world, and gives an experience of spiritual pleasure, which increases over the period of practice rather than decreases. So now a little bit about the historical and spiritual significance of this festival. You've all come. We appreciate that very much. Thank you. We hope you're enjoying it. We're continuing tomorrow also, so please come again. So now, first of all, the historical significance or historical background of this festival. This is a very ancient festival. I mentioned earlier on this morning, before we began the procession, that this festival dates back before recorded history, at least as we know it in the Western world. Of course, here in the Western world, we are prone to think that we know better than everybody else. And if we do not have it in our recorded history, then, you know, it's like it's not worth recording. This is the part of the proud Western mentality. But even though it may not be there in Western recorded history, but in Eastern recorded history it definitely is there. The background to this festival, what happened, what it is we are celebrating. It is not just a matter of getting together and putting on a show, presenting something like that. We are celebrating a particular occasion, a particular event which occurred a long time ago, and which was, in its way, so significant that it is still being celebrated. You know, if something isn't so significant, then after a while people stop celebrating. Like, I spend a fair amount of time in Russia. And actually yesterday afternoon, I came here from, well, not quite Russia, but Lithuania, which is next door, where I was learning Russian. I could try and practice on me by speaking in Russian, but I won't do that. So yes, I'm learning Russian. I've been learning Russian for many years. So in Russia, of course, being a famous personality is, well, the most famous person is Lenin. And Lenin, his birthday is still celebrated to some degree, but it's not a very big degree. It really isn't. You get a few in the major cities, many, many cities around the country. You get generally a small number of diehards who come together on his birthday and they have some celebration. And well, even to this day, in every city and town in Russia, in the town square, is a statue of Lenin. So they hold that event in front of the statue, and someone gets up and enthusiastically expounds the glories of Lenin, and after a little while, early afternoon or something, they stop and they put flowers at the feet of Lenin. What color? Red. Red flowers at the feet of Lenin. And then they go home. And Lenin is still there in the town square. And after they have gone home, leaving their flowers at the feet of Lenin, do you know who comes? And then comes and pays tribute on the head of Lenin. You know who comes? I mean the statue in this town square. The pigeons! They come and make their offerings of a different type. Hare Krishna, we don't want to denigrate him too much, although I think he deserves a bit. Yeah. And a little while ago, a couple of years ago when I was in Russia, I was out in Siberia, eastern Siberia, in one city, and there, they also, in the central square, they have a big statue of Lenin, but it's his head only, his head. Lenin's head, but it's about 20 feet high. So we drove past, driving through the town, we drove past, and we saw, oh, look, that's my gosh, what a big head. And one of our devotees looked at that head of Lenin, and with a very straight face, although he was speaking with tongue in cheek, but with a very straight face, he said, yes, that is the head of Lenin. He said, I have heard it is empty. Anyway, so, yeah, these things get forgotten. These things get forgotten. But now here we are. In 2006, we are celebrating this Jagannath Rathiatra Festival. And it has been celebrated, particularly in India, particularly in Jagannath Puri, which is on the east coast of India. It has been celebrated there for at least 5,000 years, at least. And it is observing, celebrating a particular occasion. This is what that occasion is. That is that approximately 5,000 years ago, Krishna appeared on this planet. We say appeared, we don't say took birth, because according to the Vedic scriptures and according to the great authorities in the line, going back so many thousands, over thousands of years, so according to all of them, Krishna is God appearing amongst us. He is the original Supreme Lord, the source of all existence, appearing amongst us, moving amongst us and speaking to us to help us and doing many things to help us in different ways. In fact, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Yada yada yidana se glani bhagavi bhayata abhyutana madharana se tadatmana vishrijam yaham. Many of you have heard that verse. Krishna says that whenever there's a decline in religious practice and a predominant rise of irreligion, then I descend in this world, millennium after millennium. So Krishna comes actually from time to time and in different forms according to the Vedic literatures and the great acharyas or great spiritual teachers in the tradition. And Krishna appeared 5,000 years ago in a place in India called Vrindavan. That place is still there. Still there. And there are many, it's a big area, it's 168 square miles. It's a big area. And there are many places, there are many towns and many places where Krishna performed many activities, and there are many temples and shrines and monuments and so on, which are commemorating the appearance and these activities of Lord Krishna. And millions of people go every year, millions and millions go every year to Vrindavan. So Krishna appeared there approximately 5,000 years ago in Vrindavan. And he didn't appear alone. Krishna, whenever Krishna appears, he appears with his close associates, his parents, family members, friends, and others. Of course, one may say, if he is God, how does he have parents? And of course, the answer to that is that he does not really have parents, as we all have parents. But there are people who have parental attitudes towards him, and he reciprocates by interacting with them, relating with them as if they're his parents. And in this way, Krishna has very, very deep, very intimate relationships, personal relationships with his devotees. Yesterday, of course, as we know, was Christmas Day, which is celebrated at least as the birthday of Christ. You might be interested to know or not, but I'll tell you that in Russia, in the Orthodox tradition, which is a big tradition, and you know, it's separated from our tradition, which is kind of Catholic, you know, with all due respect to the Protestants, but it's really a Catholic tradition with some sort of branches in it. But the Orthodox tradition branched off a long time ago in Russia, Greece, and some areas. So in Russia, they didn't celebrate Christmas yesterday. January the 7th, they will celebrate Christmas. And you try and tell them, you know, that you're doing the wrong thing, it's actually December the 25th, and they will not appreciate it. Yeah. Because they take their Orthodoxism seriously. So anyway, yesterday though, in the Western world, it was the Christmas festival was celebrated. Many people got presents. I don't know what you got. Many people got drunk. I'm sure many people died on the road as a result. But anyway, it was the anniversary of Christ's appearance in this world. Christ, when he would address God, he would generally, or at least on many occasions, address him as his father. So this is how he sees the Supreme Lord, that he is the Son himself, he is the child, and God is his father. But there are other types of relationships that people can have with God. It is not limited that he has to be in the father position, you have to be in the son or daughter position, something like that. And we should not limit him, that he is not capable of having a relationship with someone like the person as his parent. Somehow or other, he's not allowed to. But we are. We can have parents, but he can't have parents. If he wants to have parents, he can certainly have parents. But they're not parents in exactly the sense that we have parents, or many of you, I'm sure, are parents. Not like that. But when Krishna appears within this world, he does appear via a father and a mother, or a male and a female adult. But when Krishna appeared 5,000 years ago, the period that he spent in the... Well, first of all, he manifested himself in the mind of his father, so-called father. Then he transferred himself to the mind of his mother. Then he transferred himself to her womb. And then after approximately 8 days, he didn't pop out or get cut out, as many of us did. He stepped out, fully dressed and ornamented, and speaking, not just squealing, but speaking Sanskrit. Sanskrit is an extremely sophisticated language. You know, it makes English look like a sort of bohemian languages, informal language. Sanskrit. Very complex, extremely sophisticated language. So, on day one, in minute one, Krishna was speaking Sanskrit. And then he, within minutes, manifested a fully grown adult form. Anyway, that's a long story, but
I noticed. Should I shout? Sorry. Can you hear? You see, this is the material world. There are problems frequently. So should I just stop?
I guess the thing is...
it's going to be a while.
It'll probably be another 5 minutes before the electrician gets contacted by Jyoti Mike to get you home.
Okay. So... I don't... So I'm afraid I'm going to have to call it a day. I don't have... I was thinking about... Well, let's just hang on for 5 minutes. Let's be patient. And you never know. Hare Krishna.
Associates, and there were already many people there anyway, so they appeared in this existing situation in Vrindavan, and Krishna stayed in Vrindavan for roughly 11 years, and those devotees in Vrindavan, Krishna's devotees in Vrindavan, they're the greatest of his devotees. Their love for God, for Krishna, is greater than the love of any other devotees of God, either in the form of Krishna or in any of his other forms. Yes. And what to speak of the love that we know in this world, with all due respect, because we know that many people are very loving people and they love other people very much, even in this world, but still, that love of the inhabitants of Vrindavan for Krishna is actually many, many, many times greater than the love that we are familiar with. So, but then after 11 years, Krishna left Vrindavan in his role as an incarnation of God. He comes to right wrongs and to protect the righteous, re-establish the principles of religion, and destroy the demoniac people and demoniac influences. So when Krishna appeared 5,000 years ago, he had a whole mission. So he stayed there in Vrindavan for around 11 years. Then he went to Mathura. He stayed there about 25 years. Then he went to a place called Dwaraka. Dwaraka is on the west coast, northwest coast of India, just in the vicinity of the border with Pakistan there, on the western side. So Krishna moved to Dwaraka and he stayed there about 90 years. So Krishna was on this planet 125 years. So Krishna left Vrindavan after 11 years, and all those topmost devotees of Vrindavan, they were thrown into a bottomless ocean of separation. A bottomless ocean of separation. Where, actually Lord Chaitanya, speaking in the mood of Radharani, who is the topmost of the inhabitants of Vrindavan, Lord Chaitanya expressed the mood, the feeling, the experience that Lord Chaitanya said, Yugayitam nimeshena chakshusha pravishayitam shunyayitam jagatsaradam govinda virahena me, which means that when I am separated from you, my Lord, the feeling, the experience is such that a moment, in fact the actual Sanskrit word which is used is nimesh, And Nimesh is a Vedic unit of time, and it is 1/11th of a second, one Nimesh. Yugaitam Nimeshena. One fraction of a second, just practically nothing, is like a yuga. Yuga can be translated as around 12 years. That a fraction of a second seems like 12 years, a long time. So when they were separated from Krishna, the inhabitants of Vrindavan felt it very, very much. And they were always longing and hankering to meet with Krishna again. But they were living there in Vrindavan, and Krishna had gone, so what could they do? But then after some time, actually about 80 years later, approximately 80 years later, there was a great solar eclipse. There was a great solar eclipse. And according to the Vedic literatures, eclipses are inauspicious. I don't know if any of you have been through an eclipse and, you know, gone through the whole experience. It's very interesting. And if you kind of, if you tune into it in this way, then you'll notice that by the time the eclipse finishes and things are back to normal, I mean, if it is like a real eclipse and things go dark in the middle of the day and then later on, a little later on, they become light again. So if it's a real eclipse that you go through, then if you observe yourself carefully, then you'll notice at the end, when the eclipse is finishing, that you feel very sticky and kind of contaminated. So it is the practice in Vedic society that after an eclipse, you have to take bath and put on clean clothes. And even it's good, when the eclipse is happening, to be in water so you can be continuously cleansed. And for that matter, to be in like a sacred river or something like that, so you'll be not just materially cleansed, but also spiritually cleansed. So during that solar eclipse, so many people from the northern part of India went to Kurukshetra. Kurukshetra is also still there. In fact, it's a fairly substantial town. And the place where all those, at least some number of people from northern India went at that time, that place is still there. It's called Brahmakund. Big lake. And they bathed there. So the inhabitants of Vrindavan, they went to Kurukshetra to bathe during the eclipse and perform various ceremonies. And Krishna and the inhabitants of Dwarka, they also went there. So then Krishna and the inhabitants of Vrindavan, they met after 80 years of separation. And naturally it was a very, very moving experience to be reunited after so many years. But then after a while the eclipse finished and all the various religious activities finished and it was time for everyone to go home. So Nanda Maharaj, who is actually the father of Krishna, so to speak, Nanda Maharaj, he is the leader of the inhabitants of Vrindavan. He's like the king of that area. So he told all the inhabitants of Vrindavan that, okay, everything's over now. We have to go home. So pack your bags and we'll go. There were hundreds of them there from Vrindavan. And the inhabitants of Vrindavan said, right, okay, we'll go. Let's go. So they got their things together, but then they said to Nanda Maharaj, they said, look, you know, We haven't seen Krishna 70 days. Just let us go and say goodbye to Krishna, and we will leave tomorrow morning. Will be. But let us go and say goodbye to Krishna first. Nicely. So we said, okay, no problem. They went and said goodbye, they came back, they stayed overnight. Next morning, Nanda Maharaj said, right, time to go. Let us all go, get your things, we'll go. The inhabitants of Vrindavan said, yes, we will go. Very good. We're practically ready. But look, just one thing. One thing. Just let us go and say goodbye to Krishna one more time. Just one more time. And we will go after lunch. And Nanda Maharaj said, all right, okay, okay. So they said goodbye to Krishna, came back, they had lunch. And after lunch, Nanda Maharaj said, yes, time to go, we must go now. And the inhabitants of Vrindavan said, yes, we will go, we must go, you're right. But just one thing. Just let us go and say goodbye to Krishna just one more time. Just one more time. And we will definitely go tomorrow morning. You can depend on us. And Nanda Maharaj said, oh, all right then. They said goodbye to Krishna, stayed overnight. The next morning, Nanda Maharaj said, yes, we must go. We must go. We really must. And the inhabitants of Vrindavan said, yes, you're right. We have to go. But look, just one thing. Just let us say goodbye to Krishna one more time. And we will definitely, definitely go after lunch today. This time we will go. And Nanda Maharaj said, well, oh, all right then. You better be ready after lunch now. So they went and said goodbye to Krishna again and came back and had lunch. And after lunch, Nanda Maharaj said again, yes, we are going. And you know what the inhabitants of Vrindavan said? Well, you're right. They said, yes, we have practically gone, but just let us say goodbye to Krishna one more time, that's all. So Nanda Maharaj said, oh, all right then, if you have to. The next day, next morning, Nanda Maharaj was getting a bit much better. And he told them, we have to go, we just have to go, we must go, please. And they said, yes, we know, we must go, we have to go, we should go. We definitely better go, but just let us say goodbye to Krishna one more time. So this went on for 3 months. After 3 months, Nanda Maharaj was about to have a nervous breakdown. So then the inhabitants of Vrindavan, particularly Radharani and the gopis, they went to Krishna and said, look, it seems we're actually going to have to leave this time. But you know, so many years ago when you left us, you promised to return. But you haven't returned to Vrindavan. So now we want you to come back now. And Krishna tried to procrastinate and say, yes, well, I'm just now coming, give me a little more time, it's okay. But the inhabitants of Vrindavan said, no, you promised, you are coming, we are taking you. So they put him on his chariot and strapped him in. And Balaram, his brother, and Subhadra, they also got on. Then the inhabitants of Vrindavan tied ropes to the chariot, and by hand they pulled Krishna all the way back to Vrindavan, which is about 300, 400 kilometers. Yes, from Kurukshetra. And when they got back to Vrindavan, they had a big festival. So this Rath Yatra festival is commemorating that, celebrating that, and actually reenacting that. Reenacting that very intimate, close pastime of this very deep exchange of love between Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and the inhabitants of Vrindavan, who are the topmost of all mothers of God. And we, in our own little ways, not that we can claim to compare to them at all, but still in our own little ways, during the procession that we had earlier, we were taking the position of the inhabitants of Vrindavan, pulling Krishna, Balaram and Subhadra all the way back to Vrindavan. And now here we are, the beachfront in Sea Point. Use your imagination, please. We are now in Vrindavan with Krishna and enjoying his association. And of course, we have been away from Krishna for a long time. 80 years is nothing for us. Millions of lifetimes we've been separated from Krishna. But now, by his mercy, he is coming himself and calling us. He's not waiting for us to come and get him. He is coming and getting us and giving us the opportunity by giving us this festival and the literature and the association of devotees, giving us the opportunity to again re-enter his association on a permanent basis. So this is what the festival is about. Thank you very much for coming. Please make the most of it. Stay on this evening. The night is young, as they say. Stay on, we'll have lots of fun this evening. And then come tomorrow for the whole day. There are all sorts of nice things going to happen. And it is all part of the process for all of us of, again, re-entering, reawakening, and then re-entering our forgotten relationship with Krishna, which is there within all of us, but we forgot, and it was covered over for many lifetimes. But now, by his mercy, it's coming to the surface again. So please make the most of it. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.